Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up? What's up? What's up, everybody? And welcome back to this week's episode of Master the Start presented by GoMahi.com. I am your host, Bobby Mason, and this is our 29th episode. So thank you for joining us on this wonderful journey. Today, we have Nathan Hirsch on the show. I'm going to jump right in because he had limited time, and I know you also have limited time. So here we go. In 2009, Nathan founded an e-commerce venture on the Amazon Marketplace out of his dorm room while studying at college. He bootstrapped that venture with a $20 investment to rapidly scale over $5 million in sales within a very, very, very short time period. To date, he, along with his co-founder, has played an integral part in clocking over $30 million in sales. They have hired hundreds of workers both nationally and globally while setting the framework for a peak performing team culture. You're going to find out that they had some serious problems running this company, and that's why they created a company by the name of FreeUp.com in 2015. Nathan founded FreeUp with the sole purpose of providing online business owners with a more reliable and faster way to hire talented workers online. We all want that, so this is amazing. Throughout his professional life, he had experienced the challenges of finding the best talent to fill a critical vacancy quickly. At FreeUp, he follows a religious vetting process to vet suitable candidates, thereby protecting the client against any potential worker turnover issues. So today, FreeUp does $9 million in yearly revenue. They're supporting over 3,000 clients around the world, and they're providing gainful, value-enhanced work opportunities for 700-plus workers. Nathan is a youngster. You're going to find out in this episode. He's only 29 years old, and he has done so incredibly much. I hope you love this episode as much as I do. Make sure you settle in. I say this every week. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Also, I always say please leave us a comment, and I have been getting some responses recently that people have been leaving comments, but they don't see them show up on the page. So if you're one of those people that have left a comment and you don't see it popping up, please shoot us an email. Actually, just shoot me an email personally at bobby@gomahi.com, and I will make sure we figure that out, and I will also send you a big old thank you for following us, subscribing to us, and leaving us a comment. So, like always, make sure you enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start, and I'll talk to you after the show. Nathan, thank you for joining us on the show. Really appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy.
Cool. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So, I think before we actually get into FreeUp, I'm very interested in hearing about Portlight and how that journey kind of led to FreeUp. And then we'll kind of get into FreeUp and then you as CEO and entrepreneur.
Yeah. So, I mean, my parents were both teachers growing up, and my dad taught in the town next to me, and that town had a much better school system. So I was able to go to school there. And the thing about that town was all the kids' parents were doctors, lawyers, dentists, business owners, and we weren't poor by any means, but when I was comparing myself to them, like every kid does, they had the video games, the cars and all that, I always wanted more. And it was never more evident than during the summers. My parents made me get summer jobs when I was 14, 15, 16. I was working 40, 50 hours a week while all my friends were outside playing. And I learned a ton about customer service and sales and marketing. But I also just learned that I hated working for other people. And it was almost kind of a glimpse into the future of what life was like after college. So when I got to college, I kind of looked at it as a ticking clock. I had 4 years to start my own business, or I was going to have a degree in my back pocket, and I was going to go into the real world and get a job, and that was going to be that. So I started hustling, and I went all out, and I created this textbook business to compete with my school bookstore. I created a little referral program, before I knew it, I had lines out the door of people trying to sell me their textbooks, to the point where I actually got a cease and desist letter from my college telling me to knock it off. So that was my first glimpse into being an entrepreneur. And this was 2008. There was no Amazon Gurus courses. Like, none of that existed. No one knew what Amazon was. So I had sold some books on Amazon. I thought it was kind of cool. I had this storefront that was 24/7, and I just had to figure out what to sell because I was going to graduate at some point. I wasn't going to have access to these books as easily as I did at that moment. So I started experimenting with college guy stuff, outdoor equipment, video games, like all that classic stuff that I used. And I just failed over and over and over. And it wasn't until one day I came across this baby product website, this deal online that happened to be on this deal site that I was using, that I kind of got into the baby product industry. And when I started listing baby products, that took off. So if you can imagine me as a 20-year-old single college guy selling baby products on Amazon, that was me. And that business took off. It exceeded all my expectations. And I'm making more money than I ever thought was possible at being 21, 20. And I meet with an accountant. I have to pay taxes. And the first question he asked me is, when are you going to hire your first person? And I kind of looked at him like, why would I do that? That's money out of my pocket. They're going to steal my ideas. They're going to hurt my business. Pretty standard young entrepreneur stuff. And he just laughed in my face. And he said, you're going to learn this lesson on your own. Well, sure enough, my first busy season comes around and I just get destroyed. I'm working 20 hours a day. My social life plummets. My grades go down. And I somehow make it through to January because I'm a hard worker and I wasn't going to let my business fail. But I think, man, I can never let that happen again. I need to start hiring people. So I post a job on Facebook. This guy in my business law class responds and he says, hey, I don't know what you do, but I need a job. I barely ask him any questions. I hire him on the spot. And he ends up being an unbelievable hire. He's hardworking. He learns fast. He makes my job easier. The business grows. So there I am thinking, man, this hiring thing is easy. You post a job on Facebook, someone shows up, you make more money, your life becomes easier. And I just proceed to make bad hire after bad hire after bad hire, just learning so much about hiring people in general. I quickly learned that college kids, not very reliable, and no 30-year-old expert wanted to work for me. What did I know what I was doing? So I turned to the remote hiring world, the Upworks, the Fivers, and I just got annoyed pretty quickly on how long it took me to post a job and go through 50 people. So as I grew the Amazon business, I kind of had that idea that I could start my own platform, and I launched it with $5,000 3 years ago as a side project, and it really took off from there. So that's how I went from a broke college kid to starting Amazon Portlight and eventually the idea of FreeUp.
Cool. So how big did Portlight get? Did you sell it? Are you still working on it now?
Yeah, so we sold over $20 million total. I think our max was like over $5 million a year was probably the high point. I didn't sell it. We transferred it to one of our business partners. So we were three business partners for that. Connor and I worked on FreeUp. We eventually transferred it over to him. I mean, you got to remember a bunch of different things here. First of all, we got in at an amazing time to just be on Amazon. You could put anything on Amazon and it would sell like crazy. We had a drop shipping model. So we weren't selling our own products. We didn't have our own patents. We didn't have any IP. Very reliant on other people's stuff. And for a while, it was great. We were doubling every year and it was awesome. And then it kind of trailed out. We were doing three and then four and then five and then just like kind of going back and forth there. So at the end of it, the last few years, we're not really growing anymore. So the incitement has kind of gone away. We're not selling the products that we're passionate about. We weren't passionate about selling baby products then, still not passionate about selling baby products now. And we didn't really own anything. There was no IP there. There was nothing really to sell. So once FreeUp quickly surpassed our Amazon sales, we just made the decision that we didn't want to invest our time to that. We wanted to put it into FreeUp and build our brand and our own company, not dependent on Amazon, and we moved it over to our business partner.
Sweet. So can you dive a little deeper into FreeUp?
Yeah. So, I mean, I pretty much took everything that I liked about the other platforms and changed everything that I didn't like. So we get thousands of applicants every week, virtual assistants, freelancers, agencies from all over the world. We vet them for skill, attitude, communication. Top 1% get in, and then we make them available to our clients quickly whenever they need them. It's free to sign up. There's no monthly fee, no minimums. You don't have to buy hours up front. You can stop using us at any time. It's in our best interest to get you people you like that actually help your business. So the process is super efficient. You create a free account, you put in a request, we introduce you to someone within a business day. You can meet with them, make sure you like them. If you like them, you can hire them, negotiate rate, agree to fixed price, whatever you want to do. The freelancers set their own rates. If you don't like them, you click pass and provide us feedback, and we get you someone else based on that feedback. So that part's fast. And then on the back end, I mean, I'm pretty easy to contact. I have a team of people that monitor my Skype, email, live chat 24/7. So if you have even the smallest issue, we're always there. And then we have a no turnover guarantee. Freelancers on our platform rarely quit. If they do, we cover replacement costs and get them a new person right away. So that's really what we're all about, the pre-vetting, the speed, the customer service, and the protection.
Wow, that's that's definitely unique. And I would assume it's a pretty competitive market, right?
Just in terms of like the business model compared to everyone else out there?
And you have enormous companies like Upwork and stuff like that. And would you say that vetting process is what really sets you apart? Or what do you think your big differentiating factor is?
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of competitors, right? You got the big marketplaces, you've got every agency out there, every virtual assistant company out there. To me, and there's a lot of different competitive advantages. I mean, you can't compete with the big guys on software, on marketing, like all that stuff. You can always compete on customer service and the actual stuff that you provide. So I think we go well and beyond there. But for me, the main thing is speed. I think that's what entrepreneurs want. You can always make more money. You can always hire more people. The thing you can't get back is your time. And for someone to be able to create a free account and put in a request and get someone really good that's already vetted same day. I mean, we have clients that get started with their freelancer within hours or minutes of putting in their request. And that's something I don't think anyone else can compete with us on.
That's really awesome. And I think, at least based on what I was reading, you guys have a pretty solid referral program, and I would assume that has helped the rapid growth.
Yeah, I mean, that for the first year and a half, we spent pretty much zero money on marketing. We grew from the referral program. We created this pretty early on, probably month three, where you get 50 cents for every hour that we bill to someone that you bring in forever. So we paid out about $250,000 plus last year in referral money. People told their friends, influencers wanted to work with us, and they obviously cared that we took good care of the community, but the affiliate money was nice too. And that was the main way we got off the ground. I mean, whenever you start a company, you have no idea what the client reaction is going to be like. And luckily it was positive. And early on, we gave people a reason to tell other people about us. And it was kind of, I don't know if overwhelming is the right word, but I mean, we would talk to someone like, oh, I was at a conference in Japan and we were talking about FreeUp. And that's like in year one of the company. I always thought that was kind of cool. And who knows if they'd be doing that or not if we didn't have that official referral program in place.
Wow. I'm going to have to really focus on the referral program now that you said that, because that makes a lot of sense. And it seems relatively simple in a way. But I'm sure you have to stay on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's in our software. We're always looking to improve it. I mean, we just launched fixed pricing, or we're launching fixed pricing. So we're adding like a different level there. And there's different stuff that goes with it. But people want to know that they get something back. And it's definitely the word of mouth thing is so underrated. I mean, you have everything with like funnels and Facebook ads, and there's so many ways to market. But we do all that. But the main core is the relationships we build. We want to take really good care of people and give people that wow experience where they want to tell every other business owner, because every business owner needs to hire someone at some point, whether it's an employee in the office or it's a virtual assistant in the Philippines or a US freelancer, whatever it is. And most people have had not so good experiences hiring some platform, some agency, some person out there. So they're always looking for a good resource. And if you can create that wow factor where people have a really good experience, your name's going to get out there. And that complements all the other marketing efforts that you're doing.
So how big is FreeUp now?
So we did about 9 million last year. We have 2,000 plus freelancers on the platform right now.
That's awesome. So you are definitely in the category of serial entrepreneur. Therefore, I can ask you this question. So that means you failed a ton, like you mentioned early on. Could you share with our audience a specific failure that you think may have set you up later for success, or possibly just one of your favorite failures that comes to mind?
It's funny because I actually changed my bio. I took out the word serial and I just said long time because I don't know what serial entrepreneur means. Like, does it mean I own 10 companies right now? I don't know. But yeah, biggest failure. Back in the day, I had this genius idea to hire a manager of the day. And I was really stressed out in my business. It was growing. I couldn't focus on anything besides the business. So I thought, man, if I just hire this one person and teach him how to do everything, that'll make my life easier. So for 6 months, I trained this person to do orders, listings, customer service, every single part of the business. And keep in mind, there wasn't really the Amazon software back then that there is now. So almost everything was manual work. And at the same time, I had this supplier that I was probably doing 85% of our business was from him. And I said, you know what, let's not focus on the other 15. Let's just crush it with this one supplier. So 6 months of planning of work, I implemented, I executed. This guy is crushing the business. He's doing a great job. I'm sleeping better at night. Business is on autopilot with his manufacturer. Money's rolling in. And I think, man, I deserve a vacation. I haven't had a vacation in a while. So I go to Myrtle Beach and I'll never go back. And on the first day of my vacation, I get 3 phone calls. The first from the manager of the day telling me that he was quitting on me. The second from my supplier telling me that they no longer wanted to do business with me. And the third from my accountant, just to top it off, saying that someone had filed a fake tax return in my name and had stolen $40,000 from the government. My identity was stolen and I was going to have to deal with that mess when I got home. So I went from this unbelievable high to I'm this 21-year-old person working for myself. No one can tell me what to do. I'm making bank to let's just start all over again from scratch. But I learned a very valuable lesson about diversification young as an entrepreneur, and I'm pretty happy I learned that lesson in year 1 and 2 and not in year 5 and 6. But I came back. I said, hey, I have X amount of money in the bank account. I have these people that they're my resources. They're what I have to build this up. Let's start contacting lots of suppliers and build tons of relationships. And it wouldn't be the last supplier that dropped me, but the next time it wasn't that bad because I mean, at the end of it, we had hundreds of manufacturers we were working with. And then I said, let's departmentalize. One person for customer service, one person for listing, one person for orders. So the next time someone quit, you just plug someone back into that spot. And so that was probably one of my biggest failures that still haunts me to this day.
No more Myrtle Beach, huh?
No more.
So what do you believe, like either as CEO or the founder of a business or an entrepreneur or someone in the crowdsourcing world, what do you think are bad recommendations that you hear all the time in your industry or in your position that you want to warn people about now?
Oh man, bad recommendations. It's tough because I'm such a unique entrepreneur and I don't know if it makes me like right or wrong. And there's plenty of people that do things way differently than me that have way more success than I do. So, I mean, you got to put it in perspective. I've always been one that I don't follow the crowd. I don't do what everyone else is doing. I mean, I got into Amazon before everyone else was doing it. And once everyone else started doing it, I got out of Amazon. And same thing now. I mean, what's everyone doing? Everyone's building a course. Everyone's running a marketing agency. People are becoming coaches and everything digital. And I'm over here growing a freelancer marketplace. So there's just that's kind of been my mentality. I tend to not follow the gurus, to not listen to the podcast and try to figure it out on my own. For me, that's part of the fun of being an entrepreneur is kind of figuring it out and trying new things. And I really take the approach of low risk, high reward situations. There's many different ways to run your business. You have no idea what's going to work and what's not going to work. So I'm going to put small amounts of money into different things. And if it's working, I'm going to put more money in and more time. If it's not, I'm going to pull back. And I mean, an example of that is I'll hire someone to run my Instagram for 3 months. And what's the worst case scenario? I fire them, I lose $1,000 and I move on. And what's the best case scenario? It becomes another lead generation stream. It builds my brand. It's one less thing I have to do. They do it way better than me. So for me, I'm constantly focused on those low risk. I also tend to really focus on my core competency. I know what I'm good at, or relatively speaking, whether it's being the face of the business and going on podcasts or sales or customer service or operating procedures, but I'm not going to spend the next 6 months learning how to be a Facebook ad expert. I'm going to hire someone who knows how to be a Facebook ad expert, and they're going to do it for me. And I really value my time in that way, where I really only do the core competencies of my company, and I don't focus on becoming a master on everything out there.
That makes a lot of sense. Did you always have that? Like, were you like this since you were a kid? I know, I think it's really interesting diving into entrepreneurs' like childhood. Because I'm very interested. I know you built your first company at 20, but what were the other little entrepreneurial things you were doing when you were 12 and 13 and 15 that led to that?
I've always hated authority. Like, anyone telling me what to do at any time, I would just block it out and do it my own way. And even in school, if I didn't care about the subject, I could be a straight A student. I mean, in college, I think I have it there. And not that my degree does anything, but I made dean's list every semester, like straight A's across the board, because I was paying for it myself. And if I was going to pay for it, I was going to get the best grades. But in high school, if you're going to force me to take bio, I'm not going to try at all. Absolutely zero effort. So for me, in the courses that I actually cared about, I would do exceptionally well. And everything else, it didn't matter what the teacher said, how the teacher tried to motivate me. I just wanted no part of it. And it kind of translated into business. Like, you become an entrepreneur to do what you're passionate about. And I kind of look at it that way. I mean, I've never had a real job besides these internships. I kind of mentioned that I learned a lot about what I didn't want to do. I probably had a few like failed lemonade stands, but nothing big. I mean, I had a pretty empty street that no one drove down. And I mean, I would create a lemonade stand there and it would fail pretty fast and I would move on. So there's no like epic story of like all these like small business failures. I think you just like learn things along the way and you figure out what to actually invest your time into.
I definitely understand that idea of authority. We're very alike in that way. So what do you do when you feel overwhelmed by work? Or maybe you've lost like your temporary focus because you always have to focus every day. What exactly helps you get out of bed in the morning and keep grinding away?
So my business partner, Connor, and I are completely different personalities. I'm incredibly high strung. I get stressed out easily, although I think stress is a great motivator. Like, I do way better when I'm under pressure and under stress. I talk fast. I kind of figure stuff out, where he's much more like read lots of books and like learn lots of things and kind of go that route. He's much more relaxed and chill, but we have the same values. We care about people. We have the same vision. So when I get stressed out, and I'll go to Connor, I'll be like, this part of the business is not working. Like, this is awful. We have to change this. He's always the kind of person I'll be like, all right, like, let's talk this out. And then by the end of the phone call, I'm feeling a lot better and I can refocus and get back to work. So that's kind of the relationship that I have with him. And on the flip side, my girlfriend, Quinn, she's not an entrepreneur. She works in corporate. She likes it. And when she comes home from work, she can do a pretty good job of just getting me to step away from business and have that work-life balance and steal my phone and just take it away from me so I don't even have a choice. So I kind of have both those dynamics going on in my life.
I think some people would possibly ask you, how old are you?
29. I turned 30 in a month.
Gosh, still a youngster. I would assume a lot of people would ask, how do you find balance in work and life? And you just brought it up, but how is it even possible that you live somewhat of a balanced life and still manage to run companies successfully?
Yeah, I mean, the thing to remember too is like work doesn't feel like work. It's not like I feel like I'm stuck at this desk and I'm like watching. I don't even have a clock, and I trying to like figure out when I leave. Like, I enjoy doing this, and there are days where halfway through the day I'll go for a run. Like, I have pure flexibility. I'm remote. I can be anywhere, but I still probably work 10 to 12 hours a day, and it doesn't feel like work. And I mean, there are times where I'll turn my phone off or I'll go, like, I have people visiting this weekend and they're going to stay at my place and I'm probably not going to be working. So there's always going to be that balance. Or are you going to have that same lifestyle where, I mean, my friends that are accountants, they come home from work, they're not thinking about work. They can play video games, they can go out drinking, and work is the last thing on their mind. Am I ever going to be in that position? Probably not for the foreseeable future. So it's a different type of work-life balance. But let's say that I something happened to me in like the next year. I wouldn't think that, oh man, like the past 4 years sucked. Like I should have spent more time like away from my computer working. It's not like that. Like this is fun. I have a good life outside FreeUp. I love my job inside FreeUp, and that's kind of how I look at it.
So I know you just kind of brought up how you can set down your phone, kind of turn it off, but I think it'll tie into this next question. What do you think of when I say entrepreneurial firefighter? And what makes someone good at fighting those fires?
Yeah, I actually think that's something that's helped me along the way. So I had this manager, I used to work for Firestone as an intern, and he was not a good manager in so many ways, but from like looking over people's shoulder and micromanaging them and stressing them out and not motivating them. But there was one thing he was really, really good at, and that was problem solving. And he really taught me how to problem solve. And my problem solving process is the same thing all the time. You gather all the information, don't do anything until you have the full picture. And I teach my assistants that if they come to me with a problem, they better have all the information around the problem or don't come to me yet. Like get that full picture. From there, I look at what are the resources I have? Like who's working now? How much money's in the bank? What do I have at my disposal? Whatever makes sense for that particular situation. Then I look at what the options are. Here are the different possible solutions. I pick one, you execute it. And then the last step that everyone forgets is you put steps in place so that same problem can't happen again. So for me, I kind of walk through that, and that's what entrepreneurial firefighter means to me. It means in the entrepreneur world, problems come up every day, every week, and it's some wide range from small to big, somewhere in there. And how you handle that a lot of times is the difference between success and failure. So becoming a good problem solver is an amazing skill to have. It applies to any business. It's kind of like being good at hiring or being good at sales. Like those are core things you have to be good at as an entrepreneur. So there's always going to be times where stuff pops up and you just have to handle it. I also have really good team leaders on my team that if I'm gone for 3 days, I'm pretty confident they could figure it out. Even if I have to come back and touch base with the client or do whatever I have to after. I also have a business partner who's probably not on my level just because he's not in the day-to-day operations as much, but he could still sub in for me, no big deal. So I kind of have the support around me with also that mentality of this is how we problem solve at FreeUp.
Is FreeUp entirely, does everyone work remotely?
Yeah, so we're entirely remote. I'm in Orlando. My business partner's in Denver. All the day-to-day operations are our virtual assistants in the Philippines that we hired from our own platform. All the billing, the customer service, the recruitment, and then all the high-level stuff, the Facebook ads, the blogs, SEO, websites, all that. They're all U.S. freelancers that are on our platform. They have lots of other clients. So we only hire people from our platform, and we only hire remote virtual assistants and freelancers and agencies.
So I think a lot of people would say companies that truly succeed have this winning company culture, right? How do you create that winning company culture within a company that's remote?
Yeah, it's a different type of culture. I mean, I would say that the culture between my virtual assistants is great. I would put it against any culture out there. But that's different than the U.S. freelancers and agencies. I mean, they're business owners. They're not really a part of my culture, even though we have the culture of collaboration and we treat each other well and they're motivated. It's different than the virtual assistants who are doing the day-to-day operations. So with them, I mean, we have daily meetings. We have the Christmas party that we pay for. We actually interact with them and build relationships and keep them up to date with the business and how it's doing. Like, hey, this was a bad week. This is a good week. So they're very much involved in that. But it's just a very different dynamic, and it's something you have to work on. And it's not going to be the exact same way as if you had 20 people in the office. But I will say, I had 20 people in the office. More than that, I opened up an office when I came to Florida, and I thought that just by bringing all these remote people together, it was going to lead to a better culture. And I could not have been more wrong. It led to more drama, more nonsense that I had to deal with that was outside the what I wanted to be doing from a business side. And I think the remote actually gives that balance where everyone can focus on work. Everyone's in an environment that they want to be in. They can work for the most part of the hours they want to work without thinking, okay, I can't leave the office until 5 o'clock, but you can also build those relationships at the same time, although it's different. And I would argue you could have a better, more productive remote culture than you ever could in the office.
Hmm. So what are the biggest problems of creating a remote culture? Like, what have you learned over the years?
Yeah, communication and expectations. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Spending that extra time to get on the same page with someone right from the beginning, having it all in writing that you can go back to if there's any disagreements, and really holding people accountable for what those expectations are, and not letting it just start going in another direction and then pull it back. If it starts going in another direction, you got to pull it back quickly. And then the communication side, figuring out how can I actually get my message across. If I'm in the same room with you, you're going to understand how I'm thinking and why I'm thinking it. If you're a million miles away and we're talking via text, you got to use emojis. You got to make sure stuff is clear. You've got to confirm and ask questions. And there's almost that second layer of communication that you have to be aware of as things go on.
So talking about all this freelancing, it makes me think of Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week. And pretty much he hits home in that book all the time about how he had all these freelancers doing all of his busy work, all of this other stuff to make him more productive. If there are people on the fence right now, they're kind of iffy about hiring a freelancer, working through that relationship, what advice would you give them and why would you recommend they do it?
I mean, we live it in a pretty incredible time. I mean, if you go back 20 years ago, you needed a lot of money to start a business. Now you can do it from your computer. And if you go back 20 years ago and you wanted to hire someone, you were limited to the people in your town and the town around you, and you were competing with all those same all the businesses in your town for those people. And now you live at a time where you can hire people for different amounts of time, project-based, different price points from all around the world, and it just gives you huge amounts of flexibility as an entrepreneur. Now, we all know you have to hire. There's only one way up. There's very few $5 million a year solo entrepreneurs out there. It really doesn't exist. If you want to scale, you have to hire. And if you're not taking advantage of the gig economy and hiring people remote and outsourcing, you're missing out, and your competitors are, or they will be at some point. So it's in your best interest to explore it. You can always give up and go back to hiring someone in your office. That's not going anywhere. That's always going to be an option for you. But I mean, I just met with this guy who owns a sushi chain, and he spends like $1,000 a week on the FreeUp platform using virtual assistants. So any business can take advantage of remote hiring no matter what you're doing. And it's like any other skill. This is the part I don't understand, because let's say that you're struggling marketing your business. You're not going to be like, oh, I failed at marketing for 2 months. I'm just not going to market anymore. But for some reason, people do that in hiring. They're like, oh, I made a few bad hires, so I'm just never going to hire someone again, and I'm just going to do it all myself. It doesn't make any sense. Hiring is just another part of your business that you need to master, just like marketing, just like lead generation, just like the finances and accounting. So don't give up. Stay with it. No one has a 100% hiring record, and take advantage of the amazing time that we live in. That's a pretty fun time to be an entrepreneur.
So when it comes to hiring, the more you talk, the more it sounds like you're an expert in it, which I could understand. You have to vet a lot of people. What makes a good hire? And more specifically, from a freelancer standpoint, what should you be looking for? Because if you go to Upwork, and I've had experience on Upwork, there's a lot of hit and misses, and you guys are kind of doing that vetting for people. So how do you vet them?
I think that for a while, I know for a while that I vetted people for skill only. How many reviews do you have? What's your resume look like? How much experience do you have? And that would blow up in my face a lot. And then I would sit back and I'd think, how did this happen? I just hired this person. He was so talented, but it just didn't work out. And I realized that the good hires, they not only had the skill where they were honest about what they could and could not do, but they also had the attitude and the communication as well. So when you find that perfect trifecta, that's what ends up being a good hire. It's very rare that you get to the end and you're like, wow, that person had the exact skills he said he had. Their attitude was awesome. Their communication was great, but that was a terrible hire. I never want to work with that person again. That really doesn't happen. The attitude, you want people that are passionate about what they do, that actually care about things besides money, that can take feedback and not get aggressive the second that something doesn't go their way. For communication, you want someone that speaks your language and that can get on the same page quickly and that can hit due dates and that handles emergencies the right way. And we have 15 pages of that they have to memorize and get tested on. So that's why when we vet people, we really focus on that attitude of skill, communication, and attitude. And we found that that's what leads to a great hire.
I'm always interested and curious about how people like yourself start their day and end their day. So do you have any morning routines or routines that you do before you go to bed? It doesn't have to be business related or anything.
Yeah, so I'm one of the people that in the morning for the first few hours, that's my most productive time. I can wake up and be working within a minute. Like, that's how quickly my brain wakes up for whatever reason. I don't know if that's good or bad. But my my routine is I wake up, I have two dogs, I take them to the dog park, which is right outside. It's super convenient. And I just work on my phone while they're in the dog park. So I kind of kill two birds with one stone every morning. Come in. Grab a cup of coffee, get started on my computer, and that's my time before 9 a.m. when most people aren't bothering me and I can get caught up in the day, work on some projects, get organized. And then at 4:30 every day, I go to the gym and I do a very intense workout, an hour, 5 days a week. And that kind of gets me away from business. I can take away any stress. It's something that just gives me a reason to step away from my computer. And then after that, when I come home, my girlfriend's usually home and I can get away from business unless I have like a podcast or something that night. So there's obviously other stuff that goes into my day, but those are the kind of things that are set in stone on a Monday through Friday basis.
I love that. The last question I'm going to ask you before we jump into the quick fire and kind of start wrapping this thing up is, I know you brought up how you handle problems. Now, do you handle creative problems in the same way? Because it sounds like you start a lot of things, you make a lot of pivots. How do you handle creative problems? How do you weigh the risk? And how do you ultimately decide to move forward on one of your solutions?
Give me an example of what you define a creative problem. Are we talking like graphic design work? What were we talking about?
No, I mean, essentially, I define a creative problem within a company as any major problem that you are just trying to shift your company in a new direction. So you're making changes, you're enhancing the product, or you're enhancing the people within the company.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of falls under the exact same problem. My problem-solving method doesn't change no matter where it is. I mean, in that situation, let's say I'm making a pivot. So we're adding fixed prices to our software. That's a big thing right now. We've spent months planning it. We identified it as a problem months ago, and it was very simple. We gathered the information. We figured out what's the issue. Like, why did we not do this before? What's the feedback? Why do people want it? What opportunities would it open up? What are our competitors doing? All that information. And then what resources do we have? Okay, we've got these developers. We have our billing team, whatever. And we have Connor and my time and how much time can we commit to it? We figure out the different plan and how long it'll take. And we pick one and we execute it. And then that last step is more of that problem solving of how can we do it faster next time? How can we avoid any issues or be proactive so that we find the problems before any clients or freelancers do? So very, very similar process.
I lied about the quick fire, I guess, because I have another question that just popped in my head. Did you say all of your freelancers basically apply for FreeUp, or do you reach out to freelancers or a little of both?
We get about 3,000 applicants a week to get on our platform.
How in the world do you sift through that?
I mean, I have a team of people that's their job for 10 hours a day is to sift through that.
So did you guys just create like a box of requirements that you want them to look at? Or do you just trust every single person to make the right decision? Or how does that work?
No, we definitely did not just throw 10 people on a team and say, hey, like, let us know who you like the most. That's not how it works. It's very structured. We have certain things we look for, all the questions, all the skill tests, our best practices, like everything is very structured. And we have meetings with them every week. I mean, I look at the hiring processes. You never get to the end. You're like, oh, my process is good. Like, this is it. You're always trying to improve it. So we'll meet every week. And if someone gets through and they shouldn't, we'll say, hey, what new questions can we ask? How can we restructure this? And I mean, even at the end of the year, we'll go in and we'll say, hey, like, let's look at the whole thing and figure out where we can make improvements. And the people that are actually in that team doing it every day, we don't want robots. We want them to come every day with ideas and trying to improve it. So they're constantly giving us ideas. And I know the process is getting better and better every single week. And that's how we look at it.
That's awesome. We'll jump into the quick fire questions. So this is our random question from our listener this week. If you could create one law that does not exist today, what would it be and why? I'm putting you like on the spot.
Like a U.S. law?
Sure.
Oh, man. Law. Oh, man. I don't want to go too political either. Oh, man. I don't know. Can I pass? I don't have any good laws.
you can definitely pass.
I'm going to pass on that. I try to stay out of politics, and I would just go on a long rant in that direction.
Yes, we don't want that. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with it, but maybe some listeners would.
Someone will. Some client of mine will hear it and not be happy with my opinions.
I can respect that, and I'm sure the listener will respect that we tried to put their question on the show, but it was dangerous. Okay, so the second question, and we ask all of our listeners these same three questions. What skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college?
Man, skills. Sales and problem solving. I mean, if you have sales skills, you can do anything you want, whether you want to be an entrepreneur or you want to work for a big company. I mean, sales is everything. I mean, my girlfriend does sales. It's inside sales. And if she wasn't good at sales, she would really struggle at her job. So, I mean, I would focus on sales first. Sales is one of those things that it cures everything else. I mean, if you're good at sales, you can always hire people to do everything else. If you struggle at sales, but you're good at operations, your business is going to have a hard time succeeding because the people that are good at sales are going to take your sales away. So I would really focus on the sales and relationship skills first.
So how do you improve on the sales skills? Like, I'm thinking about those. You and I are kind of extroverted. Like, I can just tell by the way we talk together, but the introverts, there's nothing wrong with it. How do they perfect sales, or how do they improve on that in the relationship aspect? Because it's so important.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, the way that I go about anything is I just do it until I become good at it. I mean, when I would work for Firestone, I had to sell credit cards. I had to sell car services that I didn't even understand. And I would just go up to the person and try to sell it and fail and fail and fail and just keep changing it until I figured it out. Now, a much better strategy that I think other people would most likely do. I mean, there's a lot of great people. We work with partners, Alex Shalinsky, Rob Quinn, Andrew Croese. They all teach different types of sales and marketing. It kind of blurs the line between the two. And there's so many people out there. I mean, Landon Porter, I just had him on my podcast, has an incredible sales method that's not pushy and salesy and more relationship building. So there's a lot of experts now that you can learn from, but there's no substitute to going out and doing it and learning from the real life experience.
One more question off of that. What do you think makes a good salesperson?
For me personally, I come from a place where I genuinely want to take care of someone, and I only want someone to work with me if they're going to have a good experience. And I think that if you come from that place and you don't come from the place of a used car salesman who just needs to hit his quota and doesn't care at all about what he's selling or who he's selling to, everything else becomes easier. When you become someone who has something of value to offer and you build and you have the reputation that you're going to take care of people. I mean, on FreeUp, 99% of the freelancers do an amazing job. My phone's not blowing up all day. Like, they do good work, but there's always going to be that 1% and it's that have issues because they're human and stuff happens. And even the best freelancer in the world aren't the best fit for every single client in the world. And it's how you handle that 1% that decides how you are as a business owner. This is all my opinion. So for me, if you come from that place where you're going to make sure that the people that you do sell succeed or are happy one way or another, everything else becomes easier. And then it just becomes, how can I make my message more clear?
Very good answer. The second question that we ask everyone is, what do you believe needs to be sacrificed for success?
Weekends, I don't know. You don't just wake up one day and be successful. Every single successful person out there has a million different stories of how they failed or how they went through a hard time or how an opportunity came up and they just took advantage of it. I mean, you got to be prepared for anything. I remember that this guy, Ben Cummings, who's well known in the e-commerce space, after pitching influencers for the first 6 months of FreeUp, finally landed him. He was going to promote us to his community, and he's one of our biggest affiliates now. And he pretty much said, Nate, like, I'm going to give you a chance, but if you blow this, you're never getting another chance with me. So after I presented to his group, for an entire weekend, I gave everyone my personal cell phone number, and they could just call me, and I was there, and I was going to take the best possible care of his community. And it wasn't my most fun weekend. It was 14 hours a day of repeating myself on the phone over and over, but I wasn't going to let that opportunity go away. So I think that hard work and the sacrifice is really just taking advantage of the opportunities you get. We all run into different levels of luck, different levels of opportunity, different levels of relationships or people that you run into. And it's how you execute and how hard you work at those things that a lot of times determines whether you're successful or not.
So the last question here is, what is one life hack young professionals could apply to their life this week to become more successful?
Business or personal?
Actually, can you do both?
Yeah. My life hack for personal is you got to work out. You got to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, and I'm talking physical exercise, your brain is going to turn to mush. Again, this is all my opinion, but I am way more productive when I've had a good workout or when I've worked out like 3 or 4 times that week and I can focus on work and I'm eating healthy than anything else. There's no substitute. So drink less, eat better, and work out more. In terms of business, I use Calendly or like any kind of calendar planning tool where my calendar, I have stuff that is booked in like months in advance. And those are all opportunities. They're clients, they're partnerships. And for someone to not have a calendar set up where someone can quickly book a time with them and it's set in stone and it's there, to me, that's a huge mistake. And it's something that really changed business for me.
So what do you use for a calendar? And I know I used it, but I can't remember what you were using.
It's called Calendly, and I have no affiliation with them. There's probably other tools that are better than them, but for me, they're perfect.
And do you have to pay monthly for something like that?
They have a free version. I pay for the $5 a month or whatever it is for the upgraded version.
Oh, big shot. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. We'll definitely link all of that stuff. And before we let you go, have any calls to action? You have any asks of the audience?
Yeah, so go to freeup.com with 3 E's. You can create a free account, mention this podcast, get a $25 credit to try us out. My calendar is right at the top. You can book a free time with me. If you want to check out our content, I have my own podcast called The Outsourcing and Scaling Show. We have the FreeUp YouTube channel and the FreeUp blog. And my mentality is I can get you really good people, but if you don't know what to do with those people outside, it doesn't do you much good. So check out our content. It'll really help you improve your hiring percentage, which is what we're all about.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. And it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
This is Bobby again, and these are the closing reminders. Before I let you go and enjoy your wonderful week that you have planned, I'm sure you do have some amazing plans this week. You're going to do something incredible in the business world. And you know what? Actually, while I was thinking about it, update us on what kind of incredible things you do this week. And if you do update us, we'll give you a couple of shout-outs on our social platforms. And I didn't say it in the opening, make sure you check out our social platforms because we're doing some stuff, aka our Instagram's actually starting to receive some followers. So check out our Instagram at MasterTheStart. Check it out on Twitter at MasterTheStart. Check it out on Facebook at MasterTheStart. And if you're a business professional, only love LinkedIn, don't worry. We are there too at MasterTheStart. So, couple of reminders before I let you go. Number one, the best way to improve any skill is to go out and do it. At first you may fail, but eventually you will master that skill. As for the life hacks this week, we got really lucky with Nathan. He gave us a personal life hack and a professional life hack, but let's jump into the personal life hack first. This week's personal life hack for you is this week, exercise more and eat better. This will lead to a more productive week. Try it. I will try it even. Maybe I'll eat a few salads. Hopefully it makes me a much more productive worker because, oh, salads are just so boring. Anyways, as for the professional life hack, make an account on a scheduling app such as Calendly this week, and also make sure you allow others to more easily schedule a time to meet with you, even if you do not use Calendly. So this is really important. I have been using a product by the name of Google Calendars. I'm sure each and every one of you have heard of it. The difference is with something like Calendly, it actually lets other people schedule things on your calendar. I'm definitely going to be signing up for Calendly this week. I'm sure there's a lot of other really good products out there. But I can say from a personal standpoint, it's going to be really nice having people just schedule times with me instead of me having to send them emails and scheduling times with them. So make sure you look into that this week. No matter how busy you are, it's just going to save you a little time. So thank you once again, like always, for joining us on this week's episode of Master's Start. We'll see you next week.